We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Chicago Bears select.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, presented by The Bear Report. Your number one source for everything Chicago Bears draft news, analysis, scouting reports, and more. Presented by Blue Wire Pods. And now, making their way to the podium, Andrew Freeman and Usaid Koshal.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, a Chicago Bears draft podcast presented by The Bear Report and Blue Wire Pods. My name is Andrew Freeman. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Usaid Koshal, recording on Wednesday, April 10th here. And by the time this episode comes out, we're going to be 2 weeks away from the start of the 2024 NFL draft. I mean, we're getting there, Usaid. We are really close to the start of this thing. All the hype going into this, all the pre-draft work is starting to come together here. And we have one more episode of prospect previews before we get to that. But before we touch on the position group that we're breaking down today, how are you doing today, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. You're right. It's crazy because in the football office, I've got this kind of like countdown going in terms of days until Caleb Williams a Bear. And I take a picture of it every single day just to kind of have a little bit of fun with it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's crazy because it seems like just yesterday we were sitting at April 1st. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're talking about the Keenan Allen trade and supposedly the great debate today on Bears Twitter, because there's always something going on revolved around who's going to wear what jersey number for 13. And my takeaway was some of you guys have too much time on your hands to be, you know, worrying about some of this type of stuff. But it just tells you, you know, how excited people are about this whole thing.
Yeah, my personal take, I don't care what number Caleb Williams wears as a Bear. I just know he's going to look good in a Bears uniform. That's all that really matters to me. Whatever number he wears, it's going to be, I hope, an iconic number to go down for Bears history. But we're not talking about Caleb Williams today. We're going to talk about the guys that could be potentially protecting Caleb Williams, and that's breaking down this offensive line class. This will, like I said, this will be our last position preview before we get to some other stuff. Previewing the drafts. We've got some mock drafts coming up over the next couple of weeks. We have a preview episode coming up right before the draft that kicks off, you know, April 25th on that Thursday. So a lot to get to in that time. We're just not able to get to all the positions. You know, I'll just say it right now. In cornerback class, I think we can say it's a really strong class at the top. Not necessarily a need for the Bears. That's why we're not really covering it. And then linebacker, running back, you know, tight end, you know, position groups that aren't really needs for the Bears. Maybe they could add a tight end this year, but also not the strongest, you know, classes this year. Not a lot of guys, I think, you know, that are, I'm not saying not worth talking about, but considering where the Bears are at with their needs, not a lot of guys that are going to be on the Bears radar, in my opinion. So other than like a Brock Bowers, who we've talked about a little bit on this podcast already, but offensive line today, let's get into it. Breaking down our top five tackles, some sleepers and, you know, overhyped prospect at that class. And then interior guys as well, breaking in our top five and some of the other guys worth mentioning. Let's start with the tackles here and go over our top five. Now, this tackle class is very interesting because it is it's one of the more loaded classes, I think, in this year's draft. When you look at this tackle group, I would say tackle and center this year really, really strong for this draft. And you look at the tackle class specifically, is it a stretch to say that we could see 7-8 tackles go in the first round, which I'm not sure what the record is for offensive tackles going in a first round, but I would think that's pretty close to a record. And, you know, it's got everything. You've got some big names at the top of this class. You've got some guys that, you know, some might consider to be better fits at guard, but a lot of teams are going to try a tackle early on. You got some guys that are going to be, you know, polished guys in day one, ready to start right away relative to the position. And then you got some really talented, you know, kind of project type of guys who project, have really good projectable traits, but haven't really put it all together yet. There's a really good mix. Combine that with the depth in this class, really strong depth, really strong draft for tackles this year.
You're right. It is really strong. And you look at just the depth across the board, let's kind of start there. I mean, there's a very real possibility that there's maybe even two or three Braxton Jones available in this class with all the different types of guys that are there. But no, you know, you start to look at this tackle class and you kind of start to formulate what the board is going to look like. And kind of, you mentioned the top 10, and obviously, you know, that, you know, you're going to get quarterbacks, pass rushers, wide receivers, and offensive tackles flying off the board. But for some of these teams that are picking in the top 10, like Tennessee, for example, like the Atlanta Falcons, you've even got the LA Chargers there. I mean, it's very, and you've got the Arizona Cardinals. It's very realistic possibility that you see, you know, Joe All, Olufashanu, a couple of these other guys kind of off the board. And then that's not even talking about teams in the teens like the Raiders, the Saints, the Colts, the Seahawks that could possibly even go offensive line. So it's a very good year to have a need for a pass protector. And I think, you know, just getting into this class entirely, I mean, number one and number two, and it's kind of interchangeable. It shouldn't even be one and two. It should more so be a 1A, 1B type thing because they're both going to be really good. And for 2 years running out, we've consistently heard that Joe Alt from Notre Dame and Olufashanu from Penn State are the top two tackles in this class. Now, the major distinction is, well, you got Olu who played left tackle at Penn State. You've got Joe Alt who played right tackle at Penn State. I'm sorry, at Notre Dame. Fun little fact here, Olufashanu and Caleb Williams were on the same high school team. So that's just, you know, a possibility to throw out there in case anyone wants to bring that connection over to the NFL level. But I think, you know, you look at number one, Joe Alt, what you have is this, is there's people that are going to go ahead and say, okay, well, he is a carbon copy of some of these other Notre Dame offensive linemen that have come out, right? Like the Quentin Nelsons, the Zach Martins. Granted, both those guys were guards, but play style was very similar. You could even say Mike McGlinchey, who got drafted back in 2018. But I think Joe Alt is number one, and simply because you look at him, you know, there's not a lot of guys that are 6'9", 6'10", like he is, and that have the athleticism at the position that he does in terms of how physical he is, the way he's able to move guys off the ball, his ability to basically be this guy that ends up being put on an island and is able to go ahead and is basically able to constantly hold his own down. And so you look at this and you really say that there's a lot of really good things about Joe All in terms of what he's going to be. And you're looking at him and saying, okay, you know, this is a guy that's a really good pass protector, really good run blocker, overall just plays with really solid technique. Obviously, there's some concerns about his pad level, but then again, it's difficult to ask a guy who's 6'9" to play with lower pad level because you can't ask him, you know, to get any lower than what he's probably already doing. So again, Joe Alt's just really freaking good. And then you get into Olufashanu and, you know, you really kind of go ahead and start to say, okay, who is he? You know, there's a lot to like about Olufashanu. He's got the height, weight, the length, and the strength to basically be a really good left tackle. I think the biggest thing that stuck out for me watching Olu in 2023 was that there's a high level of awareness that exists with him. And this was specific because when Penn State was playing against Northwestern, I mean, there were times where on a single play, you saw him basically see the whole field, which is important, in my opinion, and basically block his initial assignment, the defensive lineman, and then go ahead and take on another blitzer that was flying off the edge or a linebacker. And then you look at him And I think in pass protection too, he's just able to go ahead and hold up. He's got a really strong anchor, and he doesn't seem to necessarily get phased by any of these speed to power edge rushers. So I think, you know, Alt and Fashanu are pretty much 1A and 1B. And regardless of who's off the board first, like, you're getting your 10 to 12 year starter.
Yeah, I think these are the top two guys in this draft as well. And the conversation between the two has been weird, because it seems like in the draft communities for scouts, for teams, and on a lot of, you know, draft Twitter guys who are doing their boards at this point in the process, that Joel Alt has really separated himself as the clear-cut number one tackle in this class. You know, for everyone saying that Marvin Harrison is kind of this generational, you know, top-tier wide receiver prospect in a loaded wide receiver draft, a lot of people are saying the same things for Joel Alt as a prospect. I'm not sure if I'm quite there on him, but I agree. I think he's a fantastic prospect. I think he's one of the true, you know, blue chippers in this year's draft. And you look at him physically, very similar to a guy like you said, those Notre Dame connections, Mike McGlinchey. You know, 6'8", 320 pounds, athletic guy, really nimble on his feet for such a big, tall guy. But the thing is, like, he has good knee bend. He doesn't fall into the same trap as a lot of, you know, tall tackles where guys can out leverage them and, you know, get under their pads and really dictate the rep based off of that leverage advantage. You know, he does have a good ability to stay relatively low with his pad level, stay in athletic stance and maintain that leverage and use his size, his length, and his natural athletic ability and strength to win most of his reps, right? So that's the main thing for Joel. That was probably my biggest worry for him going into the year, was just that, you know, there is, I think, something to being too tall at that tackle position where that can work against you a little bit. You know, to me, that the ideal height is going to be in between that 6'5 to 6'7 range. You know, Joel is kind of pushing it a little bit at 6'8, going closer to 6'9, but he's such a natural athlete that I think he makes it work. Really polished with his technique. I mean, you know that Notre Dame offensive linemen, they're going to develop those guys really well. That program just has a great track record of developing offensive linemen and getting them ready for the NFL. And you combine the fact that he's polished, he's got experience, he's 21 years old, so he's just kind of hitting his stride as a young prospect as well. You know, he's got really good production for a tackle. Like, even you look at this past year, he only gave up 5 total pressures this past year at Notre Dame. So he did a great job of keeping his quarterbacks clean there. You know, he's a good run blocker, especially in zone where he can use his athleticism. He's not the most natural people mover, in my opinion, and that's because of that leverage issue. It really shows it more in the run game than does in the passing game. But he does a great job of positional blocking, you know, staying attached, sustaining blocks, staying in front of his guy. That's perfect for a zone scheme, in my opinion, as opposed to a gap scheme, where you're going to want guys that can move guys off the ball and, you know, convert on double teams and open up rushing lanes for your running backs there. That's not really his game, but he's still a very good run blocker overall because of the different ways that you can use him. If there's one minor gripe that I think could be an issue for him going to the NFL, I think he does have a tendency to kind of lean a little bit in pass protection, which I think a lot of the, you know, high-end pass rushers in the NFL early on are going to take advantage of. If he can fix that issue, though, he should be a lockdown pass protector for many years to come, because he has the athleticism, he has the foot speed, he has the length, he has the polish in other areas as well. But you go to my number two, Olufoshanu. Olufoshanu, like, pass protection is his thing. He's the best pure pass protector in this year's draft. I think he's very similar to guys like Laramie Tunsil coming out, where the run blocking profile is not great, but if I'm drafting a franchise left tackle, I'll be honest here, I don't really care how good of a run blocker they are. If they are locked down in pass protection and they're taking star edge rushers completely out of the game consistently, you can be the worst run blocker in the world, I really don't care. There are 4 other guys in the offensive line. You have an offensive coordinator there to scheme around that, in my opinion. An offensive coordinator can scheme around a below-average run blocker at left tackle. You can't scheme around a below-average pass blocker at left tackle, right? And, you know, with Olufoshanu, He's probably the best pass protecting left tackle to enter the draft in years. He just got really natural feet, really good feel. You kind of touched on earlier his ability, his awareness to pick up stunts, pick up blitzes, his awareness for the pocket, where to push guys around in the pocket, you know, get him around the edge of the pocket, you know, to handle inside counter moves. He's just very natural with that. Looking at his past year at Penn State, and a lot of people considered it a down year for him after. You know, I think if he would have entered the draft last year, he would have been a, you know, top five pick. And now it seems like a lot of teams are now going to be a little bit lower on him. But he gave up 10 pressures last year, according to PFF, 0 sacks and 0 hits allowed, according to PFF. So this is a guy, again, keeping his quarterback clean, doing a nice job of pass protection. Again, the run blocking, not great, but he's a good athlete. You know, he's got pretty good size for the position. I think he can get a little bit stronger with his frame. And, you know, he's 21 years old, right? So he's still in that window where he's just hitting his stride as a prospect, I think. I think he should. He probably made a mistake not coming out of the draft last year when he could have entered the draft. He would have been a top five pick, like I said. You know, the conversation around him is kind of weird because he was kind of billed as this generational tackle prospect last year. And now after a year of film, you know, there are a lot more scouts kind of picking holes in his game a little bit. It seems like he's like lower on the board. I'm seeing a lot of boards out there where he's not even tackled too, you know, for a lot of these scouts out there. So that's very interesting to me, the way that kind of is working right now. But I think we're both on the same page here. Joe Alt, Olufoshanu, they're the top two guys going into this process this year, and they're still the top two guys for us here. Where it gets interesting now is 3 through 5 and really 6, 7, 8. I mean, there are a lot of tackles that can go in the first round. I'll go to you first. You said, who kind of fills that 3 through 5 range for you in this tackle class?
Yeah. And again, you're right. You know, the 3 through 5 range is so weird because there's a dozen guys that you could make the argument for that could fit into that 3 through 5 range. But I look at number 3 for me right now is Alabama's J.C. Latham. And again, you know, we had Joe Gaither on the show a couple weeks ago, and again, you know, real good buddy of mine covering the University of Alabama, and you know, one of the big things he said with J.C. Latham is kind of what the consensus seems to be about him in the draft community, in the sense that a lot of people looked at him and said, well, J.C. Latham's going to be a really good guard at the next level. You know, I talked to someone who actually had to coach against him in high school and said that, yeah, J.C. Latham's just this absolutely freak of nature guy, a guy who can play either guard or tackle, but is likely going to end up being a right tackle at the next level. And there's a lot to love about him. You know, you start looking at just the overall physique of him in general, about 6'6", you know, 340 something pounds. Last time I checked the measurables, and what you basically have is this. You've got this big tackle who's proven that he can be put on an island. You know, there are instances where you kind of see him break down in pass protection, but you just see him play with some really good technique. You see J.C. Latham, I think, really have an understanding of what the other four guys on the offensive line are supposed to be doing, but also what he is supposed to be doing as well. And then you also just look at him and say, you know, he's got really good feet, really solid footwork, I should say. He's able to kind of move guys off the ball with ease, just using a lot of the mass strength that he has. And you know what? He is able to go ahead and reset with ease, especially when a speed to power edge rusher is going to deliver that initial first punch. So again, you know, with J.C. Latham, you're basically getting a guy who understands the physicality and a lot of what comes with playing tackle. But again, you know, what's one area he could improve in? I feel like sometimes what he's looking at pre-snap and post-snap, those are things that he has to improve on. Because you look at him the last 2 years at Alabama, and I will say one of the big knocks on J.C. Latham, and again, a reason that he may be, you know, 3, 4, or 5 for some people on the board, is he doesn't have the awareness that a guy like an Olufoshanu or a Joe Alt really has, which in a sense, yes, that's a mental quality, but that is still something that, you know, is something teams are going to go ahead and consider.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, Latham's an interesting prospect for me because he had a really nice year for Alabama. I'll be honest, though, he did not make my top five, and maybe I'm just a little bit lower on Latham compared to the consensus. Things I like about him is he's obviously just a huge human being, right? 340 pounds, good length, pretty decent athlete for his size, all things considered. Like, he just looks like, and I'm just going to call my shot right now, I think, like, if the Chargers trade down, let's say, for number five, he's a Harbaugh tackle, a Greg Roman tackle all the way, right? Because he's that big, balling guy. You know, he's not the best on the move, but put him in a phone booth, and this guy can absolutely delete people in the run game if you give him the opportunity. He's got one of the strongest anchors in this year's class. The one thing that kind of worries me about Latham is that in the NFL, he's going to be put on an island a little bit more in pass protection, where he's going to have to – there's going to be more space to work with edge rushers. And he showed a tendency to really struggle against inside counters in college, right? And in the NFL, he's going to face more of that because in college, especially in the SEC, you're facing a lot of 3-3-5 fronts where you're not necessarily having that, you know, guy screaming off the edge that can threaten that inside counter. So I'm kind of worried about his ability to handle that, which makes me think he might be a better fit at guard. But I think you can make it work at tackle depending on the scheme. Like, you put him in that Chargers offense where they're just going to run the ball down your throat, and Justin Herbert can get the ball out quickly in that offense, I think that could work just fine. You know, I don't want to seem like I'm like – I don't like Latham, because I still think he's a first-round prospect. But there are a couple guys here that I think are going to outshine Latham for me. My number three this year is Amarius Mims out of Georgia. And the one thing kind of holding Amarius Mims back is the fact that he just hasn't gotten a lot of snaps, just hasn't gotten the playing time, couldn't get really get in the field last year because they had a guy in front of him in the starting lineup, dealt with some injuries this year. But you watch him play, he's got 36-inch arms, 6'7". He's a massive human being, just like Latham. I think he's a better athlete than Latham, though. And he's a lot more polished than you'd think for a guy who is kind of considered by a lot of people to be a project. Especially in pass protection. This guy deletes people in the run game. He's physical. He has really good get up for a guy of his size, getting off the ball and exploding into people. And I just think, you know, you give him a year or two to get some experience under his belt, he could be an absolute just lockdown pass protector at right tackle, even at left tackle, though, if you want to kind of experiment with him there. But I think a guy with his combination of size, length, and functional athleticism at that size, really hard to come by. It's kind of like that Bill Parcells planet theory in a way, and where there just aren't too many guys with that size and athleticism on planet Earth, and he's one of those dudes, and he's a lot more polished than I think he's been given credit for. And then number four and five for me, I got Talius Fuanga out of Oregon State and Troy Fontenot out of Washington. Two guys that I think, you know, there is an argument that they might be better fits at guard, kind of similar to J.C. Latham, because neither of them have, you know, Fuanga doesn't have the best arm length, whereas Fontenot, you know, he's kind of has a weird body type for a tackle, and he's kind of an older prospect as well. But Fuanga, I mean, he kind of reminds me of Tevin Jenkins when he was coming out of Oklahoma State, just that super really good athlete at that right tackle position on the move at his size. who is just an absolute beast in the run game. He can block an outside zone. He can block power. He can block inside zone. Pass protection, he's got some good traits about him, but it's not really the strength of his game, which maybe is why he might be better fit at guard. And then Fontenot, kind of the opposite, really polished in pass protection. Just that he has the weirdest body type in this draft for me, and I just don't know what to how to handle that. He's an older prospect as well, but you know, he's one of the better athletes in this draft among offensive linemen. You get him on the move in space, and he's really special blocking in space on screens and outside zone. I think in those types of system, he can be really effective. But pass protection is very solid. He reminds me a lot of Zach Tom for the Packers, who kind of an undersized tackle who doesn't really fit the prototypical idea of what you look for in a tackle. He's like 6'3", 6'4". But he's got good arm length. He's got really good technique. He's very polished. And he's always looking for work on the offensive line. So if there's no one that he has to block, he's always going to look to help out his guard or, you know, look to pick up a blitzer or something like that, which I really appreciate about his game. You know, he plays with a lot of aggressiveness and a lot of toughness, which was huge for that Washington offensive line this past year.
Yeah, you know, I have Fuega and Fontenot ranked at 4 and 5 as well. I mean, Tyler Fuega is this interesting player because you're going to look at him and you're going to say, okay, so you've got a pretty solid athlete there, but what exactly is his fit at the next level? I ultimately look at Tyler Fuega and I say, listen, for the teams that Oregon State's had to play, he made sense at right tackle. For the competition he's going to face at the next level, I mean, they're probably a team's going to go and kick him inside at guard. Now, Tyler Fuega, again, you love the athlete. You love the versatility he brings. You kind of really love the aggressiveness that he goes ahead and is going to play with on every single down. The big thing with him is this, is he's kind of this, he's not necessarily a Mitchell Schwartz to me, but he reminds me a lot of Mitchell Schwartz because he's a guy who, yes, he's got the aggressiveness, but his main calling card is he's got really good technique. And that's really good pass protecting technique as well as, you know, just really good run blocking technique. And so you look at him and you say, okay, there's clearly a lot of potential there to work on, but it's just going to depend on where he gets drafted. I think that lack of arm length is going to be something that teams look at and they say, okay, well, we don't really trust him out there on an island by himself. Let's kick him inside the guard. Now, Troy Fontenot at number 5 for me is this kind of intriguing player as well. Because, yes, he's got some experience at guard and tackle. But, again, just being a guy who is a pure kind of – or more so of a left tackle, what you're basically seeing is this, right? Is I think, you know, there's instances where – Fontenot does kind of get, I want to say, you know, a little bit too chippy with a lot of his hands. You're seeing instances where the hand placement isn't necessarily the best and inside, you know, where it needs to be. And then you go ahead and you look at the positives, which is he's able to move for a big guy his size, right? He can move horizontally. He can move laterally as well. You can tell that he's kind of light on his feet at times and that he's able to easily take on the double teams. And so the thing with Fontenot is this, is he's a guy who really kind of overall isn't necessarily the fanciest or the flashiest guy. You know, he's never going to be as good as a Fashanu or a Joe All, or I would even go so far as to say a J.C. Latham. He's kind of a tier below those guys, but what he does have is this ability to just keep it simple and just do all the things that you would appreciate from a left tackle.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Yeah, I mean, overall, you look at all these guys, I think every single one of the guys that we just mentioned, I think are first-round prospects, at least for me. like you didn't even have Amarius Mims in your top five, and like he's probably gonna go in the first round as well. Again, I have him at number three. You know, there's a couple other guys like at Jordan Morgan in this class who has gotten some first round consideration. Tyler Guyton, who I'm gonna talk about in a little bit here, who's gotten some first round hype as well. Like I said, there could be seven or eight guys that go in the first round this year, which is just not very typical. And tackles usually do get a little bit overdrafted just because it's such a valuable position to have if you can get that position locked down. But, you know, it is a strong class overall. But, you know, with that said, there are going to be some guys that I'm going to be a little bit lower on compared to the consensus when we really dig into how these guys break down. You know, who's that guy for you, you say, this year where maybe you're just, you know, compared to the consensus, not quite there on him?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like there's a handful of these guys that could kind of fit that bill, right, in terms of player that you seem – everybody else seems to be really high on, but, you know, me personally, I'm just not there. And I would say this, right, really for me, it's Kingsley Sumatea from BYU, okay? And I say him because there's instances where he was being mocked as, you know, a guy that was going to be taken late – half of first round, possibly even second round. But I think as we've kind of progressed through this offseason, I know for a fact that maybe he's just not as good as a lot of people have made him out to be. I mean, looking at him, what you basically have is this, is you're getting a guy who, again, is freaking huge, right? He's whatever, 6'5", 6'6", right? So size is not necessarily an issue for him playing alongside the offensive line. You're getting a guy who is able to go ahead and move as well. But then again, you know, what is he going to bring to an offensive line in terms of a lot of those basic fundamentals? I don't necessarily love his hand placement. You know, I think as an offensive tackle, you're taught to place your hands in such a way where from a broadcast angle on TV, it looks like, okay, well, you're placing your hand right by the guy's armpits. Well, some tackles, right, will have their hands on the chest, basically, okay, or middle of the chest, right down the middle, just to be able to have that extra support. You know, I don't necessarily think Sumatea necessarily does that all the time. I think what you get with him is a guy who's really inconsistent with his hand placement, which then I think has this trickle effect because you're getting a guy who is unable to go ahead and drive guys off when he off the ball when he needs to, or kind of just, you know, drive them around the pocket essentially. And then what you're also getting is a guy who seems to be incredibly overly aggressive at times, to the point where he's able to go ahead and basically get meat. He also just does not have, I feel like, that recovery aspect that you need, like where you're beat once because you misplace your hands on initial punch and now all of a sudden, okay, you have to go back and, you know, you have to try to recover. I just don't see that with Sumatea. So he to me is a guy where, you know, I don't see him being the second round or third round pick that some people call him out to be. I see him more so being a, you know, sixth or seventh round pick.
Yeah, Sumatea, he's interesting. He's basically a lot of projectable traits, right? Where he's a big guy, he's a good athlete for his size. The pass protection technique is a little of a ways away, and you know, for all the stuff he can do as a run blocker, that pass protection is huge, right? I'm not sure because of his size whether he's going to be a fit at guard at the next level either. So he's kind of – you're locked into him at tackle almost. And if he can't pass protect out there, like, that's an issue for him, right? So, yeah, I think he's one of those guys where a team's going to take a chance on him in day two, and it might take a while for him to really get up to speed. Like, he's truly one of those guys where I am not comfortable playing him right away in the NFL. I would like to him to develop for a year or two before I'm ready to put him out there. I'm going to say the same thing for my guy who I'm a little bit over, a little bit lower on. And that's Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, who for all of the physical gifts that he has, and he has all the physical gifts, right? He's 6'7", 327 pounds, right? Really impressive athlete out of Oklahoma. He's got the arm length you're looking for, 34-inch arms, you know, explosive leaper, ran a pretty good 40-yard dash. You know, his RAS score is in the 9s, so he is a 90th percentile athlete at the tackle position. you know, you look at him at the Senior Bowl and you kind of see him practicing. He's got a lot of good tenacity out there. He's a guy who clearly wants to get better and, you know, wants to play with physicality. But I don't know if it was a coaching issue at Oklahoma. I don't know if it's just something's just not clicking for him. But he is, like, all over the place, you know, with his technique right now. And, you know, the tape just is not great for him when you look at his final year at Oklahoma. Just all over the place. And I think he's a guy who needs to get stronger, especially in his core, especially in his lower body, in order to anchor a little bit better, in order to have, you know, a little bit better balance to redirect and sustain blocks and pass protection. You know, he's not the greatest run blocker right now, which, again, is not as important to me as pass protection, but, you know, his pass protection still has ways to go as well. So, really, when you're drafting Tyler Guyton, what you're saying here is that we have this ball of clay at tackle that we're trying to mold, and if we can really coach him up, right, and we can maximize his talent, you might have a franchise tackle. But the floor is so low that it might not be, you know, he might not be playable in the NFL if you don't work on significant issues in his game right now. And I think that's kind of the paradox with Tyler Guyton, is that you got this guy who's got all the talent in the world. It's just a matter of getting to the right environment, the right coaching staff, and the right plan for his development. I would not take a chance on him in the first round. He's just way too raw for me. And I don't trust he's going to be ready to play within the first 2 years of his career. And if I'm spending a first-round pick on a guy, I kind of want to be able to take advantage of that rookie contract and get that surplus value. I'm not sure if he's a guy that I'm going to get that necessarily. On day two, I think you take the swing because that upside is absolutely fantastic. It's a high-end upside. He's got one of the higher upsides in this year's draft, even over some of the guys who I have in my top five. But the floor is exponentially lower compared to those guys as well. So it's one of those things where you better, you know, have the right infrastructure to develop him, I think, if you're going to take him in the first round. Now, with that said, there are also, like we said, this is a deep tackle class. There are a lot of guys who are going to go lower than, you know, some of these guys who might outperform their positions. And when you look at this tackle class, you say, who's that guy for you?
Yeah, you know, the guy for me in terms of the one that I would say could potentially be a hidden gem is actually a local Chicago area kid who went to, I believe it was Hinsdale Central High School, but that's Kieran Gajade. I hope I'm saying that correctly. But yeah, you know, he's a kid that went to Hinsdale Central, ended up actually going to Yale University as well. So you for sure know that he was one of the kind of prospects that's not really on the radar, but was at the Bears local pro day. And, you know, what I see with him is this, I see crazy freak athlete who's got all the traits, all the athleticism needed to play at a high level. The measurables check out in every single way for me. I mean, the thing is, but he's still really developing as a player in the sense that his hand placement isn't necessarily the best, but you can see kind of progressively how it's gotten better. You also look at him and you kind of continue to say, all right, well, I think the footwork is getting better too. The big calling card for him though is going to be, can he figure out how basically to go about controlling his body and playing with a higher level of body control to kind of make sure that, you know, everything lines up and, you know, the hands aren't all over the place and his footwork's not inconsistent. He's a player where, you know, to me, if I had to draw up this comparison for him, I mean, I would definitely go ahead and say that he's basically like a Braxton Jones light to me. And he's Braxton Jones light to me in the sense that you see all the traits in the athleticism and the size, the ability to kind of be a physical player. But again, because number one, he comes from, you know, a significantly smaller program like Yale compared to the rest of these guys, you don't really know what you're fully going to get with him. And it's very likely that he has to spend a year in a developmental role before he's able to take on potentially being a full-time prospect, or I'm sorry, a full-time starter.
Yeah. For me, it was hard to identify one particular sleeper because there's so many that I like. So I'm just going to name a couple guys that I think, you know, are probably going to go lower than they probably should, who are going to be nice players in the NFL. Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame, who is Joe Alt's counterpart at right tackle. He's 21 years old. He's kind of reaching that age where he's going to start to come into his own as an athlete at that position. I found myself really impressed with his technique and his ability to be a contributor both in the pass protection aspect and as a run blocker. I think he's got a really, really good future ahead of him. Some teams are going to take him on day two in this draft, and they might get a starter out of him right there. A couple other guys I like. Christian Jones on day three is a guy who, out of Texas, who I think he can be a potential starter if you give him some time to develop. Javon Foster out of Missouri reminds me kind of – it's funny. He reminds me a lot of Larry Borum in a way, and it's funny because they both come out of Missouri. But kind of that bigger mauling type of tackle that you're looking for, who's a better athlete for his size than you would expect. And then Walter Roos out of Oklahoma, left tackle. I honestly like this tape a little bit better than Tyler Guyton's. He just doesn't have those tools that Tyler Guyton has to work with, but I think he's got a high floor to be a nice swing tackle prospect on day three of this draft as well. So if you're looking for depth in this tackle class, like, there's a lot of guys there that can really fit the bill. Transitioning over to this interior group, very interesting. Like I said before, I think this is probably one of the more loaded classes we've seen in terms of center prospects, especially at the top of this draft. But there are some depth at this in this class as well when we look at interior guys. So let's start with our top fives here and kind of run through those. You said, who is in your top five for your interior offensive lineman?
Yeah, and again, it's a good year to need a center as well. But number one, you got Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. Again, a guy who was down there at the Senior Bowl, really kind of seemed to finally put himself on the radar. You know, a guy who's going to have half a dozen teams lining up to potentially even have a chance at drafting him in the first round. You know, Jackson Powers Johnson, again, not the greatest athlete, but just a guy who wins with raw technique, you know, and a high level of physicality. Again, I think that there's, when you're playing center, you need to understand and know how to be instinctive, right? How to basically read and identify the blitz, the stunts, the fronts that a team is going to go ahead and throw at you. I think you look at him and you basically say, okay, you know, the length is an issue, but he's got some really good power that he plays with. You know, sometimes he does struggle to be able to create that leverage, but he, because he is pretty powerful, especially in his upper half, he's able to go ahead and drive off some of these tackles as well as these edge rushers that may be looping inside. You look at number two, and, you know, I will say this, when you talk about Graham Barton from Duke, there's, again, interchangeable here. You could have one or two Power Johnson or Graham Barton, but Graham Barton to me is one of my personal favorites in this class because I look at him and I say this, right? He just always, number one, seems to be on. He's playing with this high motor. He's a guy who is able to drive centers and defensive linemen, right, off the ball such effectively. I mean, this is a player, right, where when we're talking him out in space at the point of attack, like, boom, he knows how to go about lowering the hammer, and he knows how to, you know, recognize and take on linebackers in terms of the angles that he's supposed to be taking them on. At the one big knock though is this: I feel like the shorter arms are really going to work against him in terms of delivering some of those initial punches and being able to kind of go ahead and take on you know, more powerful defensive tackles, especially when those guys are lined up in a zero tech, which is just straight over the helmet of the center. And then, you know, number three for me is a guy who's been your personal favorite for the last couple of years now, but Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State is a player that, you know, you look at, and again, it seems like he's been in college forever, but, you know, again, I think just to me, what he is this, is just a guy who plays with a level of consistency that you may not even find with some of these other interior guys, right? I look at Cooper Beebe, I say, okay, you see the consistency, you see how the hand placement is pretty solid, but he's able to go ahead and just drive guys off the ball. So, you know, a guy that just, again, wins with pure power, and then to me also has pretty solid footwork. Then number four, you get into Cedric Van Pran from Georgia. You know, Cedric Van Pran is a phenomenal case study to me because he seemed to get better every single year at Georgia. And he, to me, is, again, not going to be a guy who's got the best arm length, you know, not necessarily the strongest hands, but it seems to me that the size definitely there for him to be able to play center. I love his hand placement in terms of being able to just go ahead, you know, get into his pass set and then just boom, deliver that initial, you know, first punch. Run blocking could be much better, but again, he's just a work in progress. And then the last guy for me in the top five is going to be Christian Haynes from UConn. I look at him and, you know, I say, all right, well, again, he seems like he's been in college forever as well. So with him, right, again, you're getting a guy that's going to win more with instincts rather than going ahead and necessarily always winning with power. The thing is this, though, because Christian Haynes has been in college forever, again, the intelligence is there, and he's able to basically be a guy that's going to play through the whistle as well as just finish and sustain blocks and move opponents off the ball. So he's just really strong overall at the point of attack.
Yeah, for me, Jackson Powers, Johnson, and Graham Barton, those are the top two guys for me who I think will both go in the first round. Jackson Powers, Johnson, he's kind of that full package at center. I think he's a better athlete than he maybe gets credit for because he's such a big guy, right? That kind of overshadows kind of how good of an athlete he is at his size, but he definitely is better in, you know, gap schemes, inside zone schemes where he can use his natural power to move guys off the ball. He's very different from a lot of centers that have entered the draft in previous years. Like, he's like the complete opposite from Tyler Linderbaum, who was drafted by the Ravens a few years ago, who was that classic undersized outside zone center that you want to operate in space. Jackson Powers Johnson's a lot different. He's a guy who's better in a phone booth, if you will, really solid and stout in pass protection. And I've heard some rumors on just out there that on my timeline that he might drop a little bit due to some like injury medical concerns. I'm not sure where that's coming from. If that happens though, like a team might get a really good value on him if he slips a little bit. Otherwise, like to me, he's a first round lock. He seems to have the attitude and mentality you want from an inside guy as well. Number two is Graham Barton out of Duke. He played left tackle mostly at Duke, but he also played center as well. I think at center, Argard, he fits very well. He had an insane workout at his pro day. And I think that's the really one thing that sticks out for him is that he is a fantastic athlete. Not going to work for him at tackle just because he doesn't have the length, 32-inch arms, doesn't really look comfortable out there in his kick slides on the edge. But, man, you get him on the move in the run game. Like, this guy ran a 4.97 40-yard dash. 4.55 shuttle, 7.313 cone, just elite 90th percentile metrics right there for an offensive lineman. Like, he has a nearly perfect RAS score, just to put things into perspective. I think he's a perfect outside zone center who has some pass protection chops as well. He'll need to get stronger, I think, at the next level. But, man, if you want to get that outside zone, you know, Shanahan style of interior offensive lineman, he's the guy for you. I think he's a first round prospect. Number three is interesting for me. If I'm considering Jordan Morgan, a guard, I know he's listed as a tackle officially from Arizona. He'd be my number three for me. If it's not Jordan Morgan, if we're considering him a tackle, I'd probably put Christian Haynes as my number three guy. And he's another one of those guys where he's that perfect outside zone, wide zone sort of guard, where he's great blocking on the move. He's extremely athletic. He does a great job of making backside blocks where he can cut off that defender, get in their way, shut off that rushing lane, and open up space for running backs to get through the hole. He's great at getting to the second, even third level. And he's a really good pass protector as well for a guy who isn't necessarily the biggest guy. I don't know if teams might experiment with him at center just because he's not the biggest guy in the world. So that might be a transition if teams want to try him out there. But whether he's playing right guard, center, left guard, wherever you want to put him, I think he's going to be a really solid starter for many years to come in the NFL. He reminds me a lot of James Daniels coming out of Iowa, but I think he's got a little bit more nasty to his game than James Daniels, where he's willing to, you know, put guys into the ground a little bit more coming out. It kind of took James Daniels a few years to kind of develop that in his game. Whereas Christian Haynes, he kind of has that mentality where he wants to bury guys in the run game a little bit more, which I really like about his game, despite the fact that he's a little bit undersized. Number four, Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State. I mean, like you said it, like he's been in college for forever, and he's literally played every single offensive line position in college. I don't think he's going to be able to play tackle in the NFL because he's not the longest guy. He's not the greatest athlete, although he worked out very well. But he can play all three interior positions for you. A ton of experience. He can block in any type of scheme, I think, although outside zone might be a little bit tough for him because he's more of a bigger guy who's built for, you know, inside zone and gap schemes. But really solid at pass protection, really fundamentally sound, smart player. I just don't think he's going to be, you know, anything less than a really solid long-time starter in the NFL, which on day two of the draft, like plug and play, really solid start from the get-go. That's what you're looking for, I think, out of him. Maybe doesn't have the highest upside in the world, but again, he can play at a high level. And then number five for me, I'm going to go Zach Frazier out of West Virginia, center prospect who, again, nothing really stands out about him physically. He's a good athlete. He's got good power in the run game, good in pass protection, but he's just a very well-rounded, solid player. I think he's going to be drafted high on day two because, you know, he is a really nice center prospect, a class that's loaded with centers. I can also see a case where he kind of drops a little bit because there are a lot of centers that you can get later on in the draft as well. He might slip for some teams, but he's another guy that you take on day two, plug-and-play starter, going to be really solid in the NFL for a long time. I don't think this is a class outside maybe the top two that is high profile in terms of you're getting superstar guard play or center play, but there is a lot of depth in this class in the interior, especially at center. I think there's a lot of guys who are going to be 8 to 10 year starters here, which is tough to say for, you know, a lot of position groups. If you can get a starter for 8 to 10 years on the offensive line, especially in the interior, I mean, that is a great investment in your draft pick. But there are some guys that we're probably a little bit lower on compared to the consensus. You said, who's that guy for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really tough to say who some of the lower guys are for me on the board. Just because, again, you know, it's like you mentioned, right? You're in a situation here where there's kind of your guys in tier one, and then there's sort of like everyone else, right? But to me, you know, JV and Cohen from Miami, Florida is a guy that to me, you know, is not worthy of what, you know, some of the hype that he's getting. And you're looking at a guy who kind of started off at Alabama, you know, and then kind of transferred over to Miami, Florida. The thing with him is this, is he just does not have the natural strength, I feel like, to be able to play center as effectively as, you know, someone as some of these other prospects. And the thing is this, right? He's as a center, you just have to be able to, I think, drive guys off the football. He's just not able to go ahead and do that. So for those teams that are running a lot of those inside zone or even some of those mid zone game, right? That mid zone running game, you're not necessarily going to get the most out of a guy like Cohen being your center because he will not be the tone setter that I think some of these other guys can be.
Yeah, for me, it was kind of tough to find a guy I'm necessarily lower on compared to consensus because I feel like I'm pretty much in lockstep with a lot of these players in terms of where they're projected to go. If I had to pick, like, anybody in this draft class that I'm a little bit lower on, and it's tough to say, I'd probably say Cedric Van Pran, Georgia, who I know you like. For me, it's just like he's not the greatest athlete, in my opinion, and that kind of gets him in trouble a little bit when you look at, you know, in the run game, you know, what's his kind of versatility right there. He seems like his guy is going to be locked into playing a lot more gap schemes and things of that nature. Not the biggest guy either. So if you're not going to be – if you're going to be an undersized center, like I'm looking for a guy who's going to be an elite athlete who can get on the move, get in the space, and make a lot of tough blocks – at the second and third level of the defense. He doesn't really have that. I think he's a solid player. I'd probably take him on late day two if I'm looking for a guy who's just going to plug and play and just, you know, fill that starting position for me at center on a rookie contract, I think he can fill in that role very nicely. I don't see the upside with him personally. And I think there are just a little bit more limitations to his game than I think a lot of people are pointing out as of this moment. I think he'll still be a nice player in the NFL though. And again, I'm like nitpicking here because it's really tough to get any guys that I'm like really against the consensus here on this. Now, in terms of guys who are going to be steals in this draft, I have a lot of guys on my list here. Who's one guy for you that really stands out as a potential steal this year?
Okay, so in the interior of the offensive line, again, a guy that his 2023 season ended much earlier than anyone anticipated. Kind of an unfortunate way to end it, but also I think a guy who would probably be a top five player. Well, I'm sorry, not top five player, but top five guy at his position had he been fully healthy. But to me, that's Zach Zinter from Michigan. You look at the broken fibula and tibia that he had. Apparently, there's no ligament damage there, just kind of a broken bone. But I look at him and I say, okay, there's a hell of a lot of potential there. Again, a guy who's just so versatile, so powerful, really smart and instinctive, you know, going ahead and basically being able to drive guys off the ball, hold his own against, you know, a lot of these interior rushers, especially a lot of the defensive tackles. You look at him and his ability to go ahead and just get out in space and deliver that initial first blow to linebackers as well as cornerbacks. And Zach Zinter to me is just overall this real model of consistency. And you can tell he is a teammate's first type of person. So to see his 23 season end the way it did, I mean, you know that he's going to come in with a chip on his shoulder. And again, if he starts to slip, he'd be a guy that I think teams are going to jump all over.
Yeah, to me, my sleeper is Hunter Norzad out of Penn State. A guy who fits the mold of, and maybe I'm like thinking of this through this lens because of Shane Waldron being the OC for the Bears, and he's going to want that outside zone Shanahan style of center. But Norzad kind of fits that to a T, and in a lot of mock drafts that I've been doing recently, like I've been seeing him available in the sixth round in a lot of mock drafts. And I think in an outside zone, wide zone type of scheme, like he's a guy who can start for you sooner than later because he's so good on the move. He's so good at blocking in space and getting to the second level and, you know, operating those zone blocks, passing off guys, you know, with his footwork, getting to the right landmarks in his blocks. Very smart player. Like, if you can get that guy late day three, like, that's an incredible value. Now, the thing with him is that he can't play anywhere else except center. Like, his pass protection is not very good. He can get bullied pretty easily in pass pro against bigger, stronger defensive tackles. So that's going to be an issue for him at the next level. But I think as a guy who, for a very specific scheme, can be a very effective starter for you at the next level. As that center prospect. And like you compare him to guys like there's a lot of guys who kind of fit that mold as well in this class, like Bo Limmer out of Arkansas. He's a better version of Norzad, who I think is going to go late day two, early day three. He kind of fits that mold as well, where he's not the greatest pass protector because he's a lighter center, but you get him on the move and he's a very good run blocker in this draft class. He makes a lot of sense as a center prospect for the Bears later on in the draft. So I'm looking at those type of guys, and I think those guys can really outplay their draft slots. And center is a position that tends to get underdrafted as well. A lot of these guys that get picked late day two, early day three, end up being really valuable players for their teams. And it's just a position that right now is just being, I think, undervalued and overlooked right now. And with how deep of a class this is, there are going to be some centers here that go on day three that are going to be really good values in this draft. But with that said, that's going to wrap it up for us here with our offensive line discussion. I think overall, this is a very strong class if you need an offensive lineman, especially, like I said, at tackle and center. Really strong groups right there. And I'm really excited to see how it shakes out on draft night. Like I said, it could get pretty crazy at the top of the draft with all the tackles that are going to be available. But that's going to do it for us here today. Make sure to like, rate, subscribe wherever you get us on our podcast here at the Bear Report Podcast Network for Picks for Polls. Make sure to follow us on social media. You can follow the Bear Report at Bear Report. You can follow Picks for Polls on Twitter at Picks for Polls as well. You say, where can our listeners find you and find your work?
Yeah, you can check me out on Twitter at Usaid Kosho. You can follow my work on the Bear Report website as well. You know, if you're a VIP subscriber to the Bear Report and you're listening to this, you're going to want to head over to our VIP boards. There's a Google Doc there that I've posted that I'm actually updating with a daily Bears mock draft, just running through a handful of scenarios as well as potential trades. You know, it's all there from April 1st until right now, which is April 10th. So that's going to be up every single day around, you know, 8 a.m. Central Time. So definitely check that out to get an idea of, you know, what scenarios could the Bears possibly be faced with and what are some teams that have a lot of those day two and three picks that could potentially trade with Chicago.
Yeah, make sure to check that out, Bears fans, if you're looking to get some extra draft content from USAID going into the draft here. Again, only 2 weeks away, so it's coming up pretty quickly. As for me, I also forgot to mention, make sure to follow us on YouTube as well. We post on YouTube. We post podcast clips. We post videos on YouTube. Each of us had to have a couple mock drafts up there on the Bear Report YouTube channel, which you can check out. So make sure to like and subscribe to us there. For me, you can find my work on the Bear Report as well. You can find me on social media, on Twitter, at AJFreeman25. And I got a lot of stuff, you know, hoping to come out before the draft, really starting to ramp up here. Got a couple of scouting reports I'm planning on doing. I'm hoping to get one or two mock drafts out there, both on the website and on the YouTube channel. So make sure to look out for that. And looking ahead to our next episode here, we're going to be doing a mock draft of our own for the Bears next week, where we're each going to take different approaches to our mock draft. So I'm really excited to kind of get to that next week. But until next time, Bears fans, have yourself a great rest of your week. And until next time, we're going to be a week away next, and we talk to you guys, and have yourself a great rest of your week. Bear down.